Welcome to Screen Talk, IndieWire's weekly podcast, coming to you from the Cannes Film Festival backstage at the American Pavilion, where I'm Eric Cohn, the executive editor and chief critic, sitting with Ann Thompson, our editor at large, in between a gazillion different things, a couple of days into this festival, although it feels like years. What do you think, Ann? Has it been a good year so far?
It's a good year so far, I have to say. I liked Rocket Man, which is a commercial movie that'll play well for the public. And it was better than I was expecting.
Which kind of helped it.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't go in with high expectations. Taron Egerton is terrific as Elton John. And Richard Madden makes a very sexy, bad villain manager who's actually the same guy that was playing. He's playing the same manager that was the bad guy in Bohemian Rhapsody. John Reed.
Right, anyway. So at least we get to understand him a little bit more in that respect, and they get to have a real relationship.
Yeah, no, it's R-rated for sure. They did not, you know, you can see that Elton John and Bernie Taupin were there, and I got to go to the opening night and the big applause, and there was applause during the screening for your song, which to me is the high point of the movie, which
it's
unfortunately
the best part.
Is early in the movie.
The thing about the Your Song, so, you know, I was a little lukewarm, to say the least, about this film as a whole.
But you're not an Elton John fan, right?
I'm not really. I mean, one of the things that I've always found notable about, he's a brilliant songwriter who seems to consolidate various
Bernie
kinds
Taupin
of...
Bernie is the brilliant
well,
songwriter.
Well, but if you...
He's the music part.
In terms of finding the melody to those tunes, I think it really...
performing them.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, I've never really responded to the way that he uses the various genres that he works in. I've always responded to somebody else who's doing that more, whether it's blues or rock. In every era he's been in, he sort of brought that into his music based on what other people were doing, and I think on some level it's made it harder for me to have a deep relationship with his work in particular relative to a broader scope of things. And also, I didn't have a deep relationship to his story. I don't know if this movie really sold me on the emotion of his story. Having said that, the Your Song sequence really distills both the musicianship and kind of his emotional investment in it, and that's why it's so great.
Whereas with a lot of these biopics, what happens is that you have this situation where it's so true every time, where the coming of age part of it, the coming into your voice part of it, is the most extraordinary thing, and that's what that song is. He finds his voice, and then the downfall, the drugs and the sex and the lifestyle and the problems with your identity, all of that is so familiar. But that said, this movie works really well as a musical. And
well,
that's what's fun about it.
I mean, the thing is, so it's a jukebox musical, right? 20 songs.
It's not fair.
But most of the songs are in
the songs to tell the story. They're not just performing the songs. It's very innovative in the way that it collapses all the time.
That actually bugged me, to be honest with you.
What Paul does with it, who wrote, of course, Billy Elliot, the movie and the musical, I thought was very clever.
Well, it's a little literal-minded in parts because you have lyrics that could be interpreted many different ways, and they're being sung by, you know, his father or whatever, and now, you know, the nuance is dead.
He wrote those lyrics, so that's the other interesting
thing.
Right,
so it doesn't quite make sense.
No, it's fascinating, actually. I liked all of that. I thought that worked really well.
Although they do kind of set Bernie Taupin up more as sort of a supporting player. You don't really get into his, you know, just how much he was this pivotal, you know, creative force so much as he was sort of his buddy. So I think that's going to be talked about.
Interesting levels there too, because he represents the, if you like, the heterosexual leading man in the movie, which is very gay. And I think that he's an interesting character in that way.
People were wondering, you know, is this movie going to really go all the way and show the gay aspects of Elton John's... I mean, he's a gay man, and so, you know, with Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie seemed to almost get cold feet about what it could or could not show.
Which Dexter Fletcher was not supportive of. He wanted to make that movie, came in at the end, fixed it, or finished it, if you like, and then he was already on board this one. But he had an R-rated vision for the other.
But it's worth pointing out, I mean, it's not like the sex scenes in this movie are super graphic or something.
No, they pull back on them, from what I understand.
So the expectations there are R-rating, gay sex. I mean, that's not really what's... I mean, if anything, it seems like the R-rating might be there more for the drug use, you know, cocaine and all that kind of stuff.
There wasn't a lot of hideous thrusting or anything.
Right, but I did appreciate that, you know, even though he does have to come out to his mother and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't overplay that he's gay, you know? I mean, he's basically...
I think we've all gotten used to this at this point. What it means is what it... In the story is how difficult it was for him at the time.
So
there's a great scene in the movie where he says, oh, I have a girlfriend. And this guy looks at him and says, you're homosexual. And he's like,
I don't know. Maybe.
And that's news to Bernie Taupin.
Right, right. No, it's an interesting way of looking at that. So the other kind of higher profile movie to screen as we're recording was the opening night film, Jim Jarmusch's... Now I've already forgotten the name because I've seen 50
dead,
movies.
Don't die.
I was thinking only dead people left alive or something.
Only
I merged, yeah.
Alive.
I was like merging Jarmusch genre films.
Don't die.
But so the reaction to this one was fairly muted, and a lot of people seemed to think that it was, you know, maybe a good choice for opening night because of the stars, but not necessarily a great competition film. I had a lot of fun with it. I would agree that maybe it doesn't need the burden of competition, but it's a Jarmusch movie through and through,
they
and totally uncompromised.
Because it's Jim Jarmusch, they couldn't do anything else. And I think everybody knows when you put something like that on opening night, it's serving a certain function. I think Jarmusch himself knows that. Mm. It is a funny movie, though. I have to say, I was laughing louder than anyone else around me. So if you like Jim Jarmusch and you're not expecting something super serious, although it does have certain ecological issues on its mind, apparently this new Roland Emmerich movie that's selling Moonfall in the market, that just sold a bunch of territories for a lot of money, is also about the Earth tipping on its axis. It's about the moon losing its orbit.
Well,
it's a similar thing.
Everything is falling apart. I mean, all the movies we've seen in competition so far have basically been about problems in the world. As we're recording right now, I've seen everything that's screened, and you know, from
in competition,
the films that
There's
you know,
Certain Regard.
Sure, a lot is screened. I haven't seen all of those, but in terms of the competition films, whether it's, you know, a really gorgeous kind of expressionistic film like Atlantics, which is about the migration crisis, or something like Bacurau, which is sort of a political satire about the situation in Brazil, it really feels like this year's section is so much about, you know, just people who are telling us that the world is in a bad place.
And I couldn't agree more. It's very clear that that's a thematic thing throughout, especially with the Ken Loach movie, which follows up Daniel Blake, goes back to, you know, working class problems in England. But this one really nails it and is all about the corporations running the world and how the poor working stiff is getting screwed. And it's a portrait of a family struggling to stay together and not very well.
When I walked into our apartment after I saw this movie, I said, get ready to cry.
I cried.
Right,
you know,
on schedule.
I'm an easy cry.
But I think, you know, I have a lot of respect for Ken Loach movies. I wasn't blown away by this because it's, you know, you come to Cannes and there's so many kinds of films that take big swings and are trying things you've never seen before, and Loach is very sort of, he follows a straight line as a storyteller. The crisis arrives right on schedule. The performances are very well done, and you know that it's going to be about society in a very particular sort of way. He doesn't surprise you from a filmmaking standpoint.
From that point of view, though, you could look at it slightly differently. There are a lot of filmmakers who do what they do and do it well, and they're not thinking about what critics are going to write about, or whether there's some new discovery, or whether there's some new way of telling the story that's going to blow somebody's mind.
Well,
this guy is political. This guy is on a mission to show us what's wrong. And he figured out a way with his writer, Paul Laverty, to really nail it on the head.
Yeah, I mean, he's been on that mission for 50-plus years, you
right,
know?
But this one's about right now.
Yeah, it's about the gig economy.
This one is really about how the kids are on the phones and the corporations don't give a shit about whether
right.
people can make a living
right.
wage. It's about
I appreciated it. I mean, I thought it was very solid. I think Thierry Frémaux said in the opening press conference, it's very Loachian. Like, this is Loach in a nutshell. If you've never seen a Ken Loach film before, you will kind of know what his M.O. is by seeing this one. You know, not that he goes outside of that.
My argument is that maybe he's figured out that maybe this is the best one he's told like this. Maybe this is the one that actually catches onto the zeitgeist in a different way.
Well, it kind of depends on what stories you're most responsive to also. I mean, Daniel Blake was about a somewhat different, you know, character at a different stage of life, too. This is about a guy that's trying to get his family together.
It's about the same thing. It's about how the folks that run the world don't care about us at all, and really would just as soon we went down and in flames. They could care less. You know, in the press conference today, I loved this moment where they were talking about the 1% and the gap in wages and inequality and everything, and you know, at the moment. That the people in America are going, more people are dying. The death rate is higher than it's ever been. At the same time that Jeff Bezos is the richest man in the world.
Right. You know? Yeah. And the wealth disparity is something worth looking at. It's you won't get that kind of perspective from other filmmakers in competition who are, as I said, taking bigger cinematic swings or whatever. But I'm so curious about how the competition is going to play out in that respect.
Well, we think, you and I seem to agree that Les Miserables is the one that's probably got all the right stuff at this point. I see in that film a major discovery in this guy, Lajli.
Well, he was sort of set up to be a discovery, too. I mean, he's very well liked here at Cannes and in France, it seems, because he's this up-and-comer who's made a bunch of shorts and I believe already has signed with the U.S. agency, CAA. And the film is, you know, it's in tune with Les Miserables in a contemporary context, but it's basically, you know, it's got the do the right thing going of the cops versus these persecuted lower-class people, in this case a Muslim community, and it builds. The thing about the movie is that it builds.
It also has that time frame that do the right thing has, where you feel it unfolding in real time in a very short, compressed period.
And it's immediate because it opens with footage of France winning the World Cup, the celebrations around that from just
when
last summer.
People are united.
Right.
And everybody's together in joy about one goal. Again, this is a portrait of a society that's fractured, where the people at the bottom of society are not being taken care of, and all of the real tensions that are at work against each other. These three cops are trying to keep a neighborhood from blowing up, and it's inspired by the riots of 2005. It is so well made. It is so ratcheted. The tension is huge. That's why it's like Do the Right Thing also, that the potential for violence to explode is right there.
Now, I will say, I don't think it's quite as good as Do the Right Thing, so let's... The
He's
thing about that...
Lee,
yeah, that's the thing.
Film.
We gotta be careful with those comparisons.
Even Do the Right Thing was several films in.
That is true. I think, although on some level I did find some aspects of the movie a little heavy-handed, that it is an important... movie to consider as a Palm contender because of the level of craft on display and with a filmmaker-heavy jury. You know, we were talking about this before. Something like Ken Loach, he won for I, Daniel Blake.
He's not going to win again.
But that was a very actor-heavy jury, and this is a filmmaker-heavy jury, and they're going to probably center on something like that. But we don't know because there's so much more. As we're recording now, we haven't even seen the Pedro Almodovar film, for example.
We're going to see that tonight, which is exciting.
And then Tarantino is still days away. I mean, that's almost like a distant kind of possibility, but I haven't talked to a single person who knows anything about the quality of this film. Usually you start to hear from people.
He hasn't finished it. That's the whole point. This is the classic case of the dripping wet print. No one's seen it. No one's talking about it.
So the real open question here with something like that is, you know, when we see it, does it benefit from being a competition film, or could it have had a Rocket Man type of slot? I mean, they're premiering it on the anniversary of Pulp Fiction.
It's the Jarmusch. You can't do that. You cannot do that. They don't need to do that. They wouldn't bring it here if they weren't confident. They wouldn't have even brought Rocket Man out of competition if they weren't confident.
I mean, you sound as if bad movies have never played at the Cannes Film Festival before.
I don't think Quentin Tarantino and Tom Rothman at Sony Pictures are going to, you know, Sony Entertainment are going to make take a chance on a big commercial movie like this coming to Cannes if it's not going to get a bump from it.
And of course, it's opening just in like 2 months or so, so it gets that sort of marketing push as well as Rocket Man does. So.
I would say that their calculation, I think we talked about this before, is that this audience is the prime audience for this movie. That's what they're thinking.
So, as much as these are the films that draw us in, we also really have to make this effort to see a wider spectrum of films, because otherwise, you know, we may as well be watching these things in a screening room back home. And I feel like what's really rewarding for me about Cannes is that even in as you see these big movies, and apologies, it's very windy here in case some of this noise is coming through, but there's so much that's unexpected about Uncertain Regard or Director's Fortnight. Have you seen anything on that level that has surprised you or is worth writing home about?
Well, I've seen one thing early that I can't talk about yet, and the other thing, by the time this airs, I think it'll be all right, is the Luca Guadagnino short called Staggering Girl, which left me staggeringly bored. It's basically one of those commercials
that writes itself.
it's all, you know, Christian Dior or Valentino it's an opportunity to put Julianne Moore in a movie and have her wander around in exquisite couture. I was looking at her character. I was just watching it like it was a normal movie, and she comes out in the daytime in New York wearing this incredibly expensive outfit, and I was like, why is she wearing that? That does not apply to this movie. Let's just put it that way.
Seems like an odd choice to give it its own separate slot, a 30-minute slot.
I wanted to say that you and I did some interviews around The Dead Don't Die. I got to talk to Tilda Swinton, who's hilarious, always, and who's been to Cannes many, many times. You got to talk to Bill Murray.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing because they didn't know if he was going to show up until the last minute. Every email I got about the timing to show up was sort of prefaced with, Bill is a real wild card. And it turns out the reason for that, which some people may know about him, is, you know, he doesn't have a rep or anything. You just kind of like shoot him a text and then maybe he'll get back to you in a couple of days. And he was there and he was totally game. And what I really liked about talking to him is, first of all, he is very funny in this movie. He's always really good. You look at Bill Murray even in a bad movie.
Let's just be honest.
Yeah, but I mean,
make it as good as it is.
Especially him in this. There's something about his timing. He does deadpan in a way that it cannot be reduced to a punchline.
It's also like him.
Yeah, he's always very likable, and obviously he has a face from the movies. But I really enjoyed talking to him, too, because his philosophy of how he does things and how he doesn't do things, he doesn't work a lot, is really singular. You know, he doesn't feel like he needs to be working all the time, but he chooses interesting projects. He's about to go back to New York and shoot another Sofia Coppola movie, so, you know, that's promising. So we'll see. He doesn't necessarily need to be Cannes acclaimed, but it was nice of him to show up and support that film.
One of the things that I asked Tilda about was this thing where she has to always be prepared for the woman question. At the press conference, they asked her about the issue of parity for women, and she said, "There's women all around us. We just have to look for them. We have to pay attention to them. We have to give them the recognition that they're due." So they just get overlooked all the time.
It's true. I mean, it's not like there is a real shortage. Anybody who says that, you know, the Cannes has tried to fall back on that before and say, well, we pick the best movies based on what we have at our disposal. They can't really do that.
I don't think so. And I think they have this very, you can just look at it. You can see how many more women are in Uncertain Regard every year. They're in Uncertain. There's such a small number in the competition. And you were, you know, you and I were talking about the competition. I think Atlantique is a great example of a movie that deserves to be in competition, but the perception may be that that's the reward.
Yeah, and so there's four women directed films in vying for the Palm, and I think it'll be interesting to see what happens here because only Jane Campion is the only woman who's won the Palm, and this comes up every year. Obviously, it's not like... We've only seen one so far.
I really don't think it's probably strong enough.
I think, yeah, Atlantic may not be the one that takes it, though it could win something, something award, a grand jury, or you never know.
I actually found it very confusing. You know,
I'd explain it to you, but I don't want to spoil it.
Establish the rules of in a weird way, it's a zombie movie.
It is. It is on a certain level, but it's also a film about migration that deals less with the journey, which a lot of other films like Fire at Sea have looked at up close, you know, traveling across the ocean or winding up in Europe, and more about who's left behind.
But it's also about the people who are being exploited by the corporations. It's about this incredibly rich guy who isn't paying, who lives in a high rise in ultimate luxury, who isn't paying his workers, who are 4 months overdue for their wages and are forced to take off in a boat.
Yet more problems in the world throughout the competition. Well, we have more stuff to see, but we welcome people who are in Cannes to come to the American Pavilion because we're going to do our annual live show at 2:15 p.m. next Wednesday. So if you're around, come see us, heckle us, ask some hard questions. Hopefully by then...
we'll have more to argue about, Eric.
So much to argue about. So looking forward to it.